Welcome to Out of This Niche podcast. I'm your host, Madison Tender. This is where we take conversations to a whole new dimension in the realms of business, marketing, lifestyle, and brand building. Join me on this journey beyond the niche where conversations spark inspiration, ignite curiosity, and redefine the boundaries of what's possible. Out of This Niche is not just a podcast, it's a portal to conversations that will take you out of this world. I'm so excited you're here with me. Let's dive into the podcast. What's up, everyone? I'm so excited to introduce our first guest of Out of This Niche podcast. Stefania Maria is a multidisciplinary coach focusing on the world's most sensational topics, power and money. She invites us to consider what happens when we use both as an extension of our reverence for life itself. Known for her unapologetic approach to life with a unique blend of what she calls ass, cash, and sass, Stefania's content cuts through the noise while rooting in the one thing she believes matters most, our permission to be human. And this podcast episode is absolutely amazing. It's almost an hour of just money, power, all of the things. And I'm so excited for you guys to listen. Let's dive right in. Okay. I'm so excited. Welcome to the podcast. It's going to be a good one. So please, to everyone who doesn't know you that's listening, please introduce yourself, your story, what you do, how you got started, all of the things. Please share it with us.
Oh my God. It's such a loaded story though, because I am a nicheless wonder. So hi, I'm Stefania. Hello. I guess the best way to explain what I do is I help women come home to the time, money, and power that it has always been theirs. And I do that through like different programs and experiences that I host through my coaching company. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my story is so bizarre because I grew up no money, parents worked minimum wage jobs, you know, the classic tell-all tale. But because I was so distinctly aware of money growing up, I became hyper-focused on it. Mm-hmm. I was so committed to finding my way out of the lifestyle that I was living, right? I didn't have running water in elementary school. Both my parents smoked. So I was like kind of ashamed of my upbringing and the situations that we got into. Like the pastor would bring over a Christmas box every Christmas, and my parents would be embarrassed. And then I would be embarrassed because we weren't doing financially well. And I just remember in high school, really committing to myself that I was going to do anything to change the color of my collar. Yeah. Unfortunately, that level of desperation and obsession led to so many reckless choices that are applauded by today's society. Mm-hmm. That led me to burnout, neurotic breakdowns, mm-hmm. and needing to blow up my life several different times because I just was so personally exploitive, mm-hmm. and self-disrespecting. So after I don't know how many events in my life where I've really had to learn like, oh, that really wasn't self-respectful. Mm-hmm. I was a financial controller for an international startup. I've worked at banks. Like I've really gotten my hands dirty in the financial world. And then I just realized that there was a fundamental philosophy that was missing in how people interacted around money, mm-hmm. and around their schedules, as well as around like their personal power, AKA sovereignty. Mm-hmm. And I just said, I want to do something different. And I decided I was going to create a coaching company that was really rooted in reverence, a deep embodied sense of respect for the person that you are and the resources required for you to live your life. Mm-hmm. I'm not really interested in talking about abundance. I'm not really interested in talking about scarcity. I focus on, is that the most respectful action? Why or why not? And letting that conversation kind of take us in whatever direction it needs to go. And that's why when people meet me and why I wanted to be on this podcast, they're like, well, what's your niche? And I'm like, well, I need you to understand that with some of my clients, they come to me for money and working with like inner teen wounds around money. Mm-hmm. And then some of my clients come to me around booty play and how that's like a energetic grounding practice. Like I do so many different things and I'm oddly qualified to do all of them because I just am a little bit of a certification junkie. Yep. And yeah, so I guess that's like the shortest way I can explain my story. it's taken a lot of suffering and sacrifice for me to realize that I don't need to suffer or sacrifice to live a really lovely life.
Yeah, I love that. That was a perfect story. That was summed up perfectly. And I think that I feel like I can definitely relate to, I feel like growing up, I was so, you know, I was not like money was a thing. It was almost like, you know, money doesn't grow on trees, yada, yada, yada. Like that was like the conversation at the table at dinners, like, oh, like, you know, the money, the bills and all of the things. And I feel like I didn't notice how much it impacted me until like I started my business, until like a few years into my business. So I know you say you have some clients who come to you with different things, which I think is amazing. But when it comes to a handful and a collective and a big percentage of your clients, are you kind of working with them through like the money situation from their childhood and how it shows up into their daily life now? And kind of what does that look like? What do you think is the collective like struggle that your clients come to you with? Do you see like an overarching theme kind of?
Yeah. So to give you a background, I had created a program called Bank. It was a course on financial intimacy, which is what I call my money work, is how intimate are you with your financial world? And one of the things that I started to realize was that my clients were coming to me because they wanted to be intimate with their money. They wanted to know their money. They wanted to understand and have it grow, but they kept making this like really intense choices every single time. They would invest $30,000 in a program they couldn't afford. They would get into $100,000 in debt. They would buy Uber Eats, which is my own personal thing. But what I started to realize was every single person almost had this like addiction to intensity. And I was paying attention to it for a couple months. And I was like, what is this about? Like the content of these courses that I run are not intense by any means. Like it's very basic, very soft, very loving, very silly and like goofy. Cause that's just how I talk most of the time. I was like, why is all this intensity here? And what I started to realize was that most people, not even just the people who come to work with me, are operating from their adolescent self as it related to their money. And the thing about our adolescent selves, and I don't know how like deep into spiritual practices you are or anything, but the inner child gets a shit ton of attention. The inner teen, not so much. Mm-hmm. But the way that I see it is that our teenage selves are the survivalist, because they only care about making it out of the teenage years. Mm-hmm. And so the commitment is I either need to survive my family life. I need to survive my social life. Some people had to literally survive because they were homeless or whatever the case was. So it's so rooted in survival. But what happens is that when we get good at survival, we're constantly looking for opportunities to flex those skills because we're good at it. And we can trust ourselves to navigate it. Mm-hmm. How that translates into money is that if you're good at navigating pain and problems, you will unconsciously choose things that will invoke those very same pain and problems. Mm-hmm. So I started looking at it from, okay, this is how everyone else is doing things. Like they're all operating from their adolescent self. Cause it was almost like I was talking to teenagers about money. And I was like, man, you are 34. And I was like, hold on, maybe I need to go look at like, who was I in my teenage years and how did I relate to money? And all of a sudden it just opened up this can of worms. And I was like, oh, my teenage self was a workaholic. I was already working at 14. I didn't go to parties. If I did, it was after I got off my job to be a designated driver. I really didn't have fun. I was doing extracurriculars, but not the ones that would cost too much money because my parents couldn't afford it. Mm-hmm. And so there was this energy of I've got to not have the full thing that I want in my life. I've got to put a damper on it. And I've got to really work hard for the thing that's dampened. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, well, how did that impact my 20s? Well, I went to university. I worked 10 years on a degree that I couldn't complete because I was also working full-time. I worked 3 jobs at one point. Had horrible traumatic experiences with one of them and still had this like energy of I have to work really hard for a very mediocre existence. And then I was like, okay, teenager, brought her into my 20s. Okay, well, what if we just give her some grace? Because, you know, frontal cortex doesn't develop till you're 25. What happens after 25? Same friggin' thing. I was a financial controller by the time I was 25, and I was dying inside. I was working from 7 o'clock in the morning till 7 o'clock at night because my team was East Coast, and I had to pull reports and do all of these different things for them. And I had no life that was really mine. Like, my life was work. And the choices that I was making were living in this like very mediocre, dampened existence. And it came to this point where I realized, I was like, oh, I could live like this for the rest of my life and nothing will change. Like, I could feel the plateau. And I was like, I don't know where that ends. I think the saddest part about that journey is, like, I probably had 4 distinct nervous breakdowns tied to that energetic that started in my teenage years. And so I've really focused on, well, how do I unwind that in myself? And then I ended up creating a program to show people how I started to unwind that, where, like, let's unwind the addiction to working. Let's unwind the commitment to survival because we're really good at it. Like, how do we do that kind of thing and then tie it back into the money? And that's what brought in one of my programs called the Piggy Bank.
Yeah.
Just so people could have this introduction to financial intimacy, but start orienting away from having their inner teen grow up, but actually see that their inner teen is doing what the inner teen does. It's that it's not appropriate for us to have an adolescent version of ourselves in our money. Like, ever. And so I've been doing that for the last couple of years. And now I'm in this position where people like to think that when it comes to personal growth or development, that you do something once and it's done. But the truth is, and you know this as a business owner, like, every up level is like the same stuff that happened. Right. So, like, I joke around and I'm like, your money shit at 180,000 is the same money shit at 300,000 or 30,000. Right. It might seem like you have more money, but you're still working with the same wounds because they just get reactivated.
Yeah.
And so now when I work with people, it's about deepening that practice so that they just know how to navigate it well.
Yeah.
And they stop thinking that money or time or energy is up to anyone else other than them.
Yeah.
But, like, really feeling sovereign about your ability to afford your life however you want to live it.
I love that. I like how you talked about a lot of times it comes up in our teenage years, because whenever I would do like inner child work, I'm like, you know, trying, I worked with someone who did like hypnosis and who did all of these things. And like, I literally don't know and can't remember anything from my childhood. Like, I have this block, but I can remember things from like my teenage years and what I did and what I've learned and conversations at the dinner table. And that's what I've always like reflected on, is like during those years. And what do you find when people come into your programs and when you kind of have them go back to like their teenage years? I know you were kind of, you know, working on the I'm working so hard type deal in your teenage years. What else do you find is people work through other than like working hard? Like, do you find like, so for me, I put tons of pressure on myself because I was an athlete for so long. I was the pressure to like do better, constantly do more, be more. And that resulted in my business of do more, make more, be the best. And that's what I worked on for like 2 years. What else do you find? Like, do you see that pressure? Do you see working hard? Do you see other things that kind of come up for your clients?
Oh, I see it all. And it's funny. So like, people will be like, well, who's your clientele? I was like, I couldn't tell you, because some of my clients, like, they're trust fund kids.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so they grew up with all of the resources. So the things that how they see the world, there is this judgment that like trust fund kids, they got everything, so they don't have any problems. It's like, actually a lot of them feel very insecure and inadequate because they don't understand money.
Yep.
It was just always available.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're constantly very codependent with their parents a lot of the time. This isn't the case for everybody. It's always, there's tons of nuance in it, but like codependency with your parents, because your parents provided you everything, but you have no concept of how to provide for yourself in a way that's meaningful or has sustainability attached to it. There's people who, you know, I grew up in, my mom's an immigrant. My dad's got like a pioneer mindset. And mm-hmm. so even some of my clients who come from immigrant families, it's like they inherit their parents' beliefs when they're teenagers, or they rebel against them.
Mm-hmm.
So if the parents were like, you need to work hard. And then in teenage years, they were like, screw that. Then even in their adult years, they're still trying to live against whatever their parents said as like a continuance of that rebellion. Some people even have, and what I've noticed even with athletes is they've been so good at one thing that they've allowed other people to tell them how to do everything.
Yeah.
And like, I was a competitive volleyball coach. I know we've talked about this on Instagram and stuff, but like a lot of athletes, because they've been so coachable, they're waiting for someone to tell them what to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the way that I coach is I will certainly not be telling you what to do because it's your money, it's your life, and it's what is important to you. It's everything has got to be back on you and how you want to live. I will give you the tools for you to figure out what the best choice is, but I can't tell you what to do. And so what a lot of athletes have done, you know, post-secondary school primarily, is that they'll outsource their, how much money they make to somebody else. They'll say, oh, well, so-and-so is offering me $40,000. And I'm like, but that role's 80. Why would you even accept 40? And they're like, oh, but you know, so-and-so told me. It's like, what? And so trying to like have people come back into themselves from what's been indoctrinated into them.
Yep.
Because our teenage years were so impressionable. And we know that, right? Like 14, 15, 16, 17, we're so highly impressionable. And a lot of those impressions aren't useful in our adult years. They're useful if we have to survive something, if we need to make do with what we've got, but we don't have the autonomy in our adolescent years to do anything that we do when we have, when we're adults. Mm-hmm. And so like, there's just such a variety of what people are dealing with at any one time that it's almost heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Because I can see whether you grew up with something or nothing,
mm-hmm.
those teenage years have messed up everybody. And when I look out into the world, I'm like, oh, that money problem can be solved X, Y, Z. But I don't know if you really want to go look at the wounds that you inherited in your adolescent years, because those ones hurt the most.
Yeah. Do you think they hurt the most because that's what people remember the most? Like yeah. they can really like, you know, when you're like 4 or 5 years old, you know, I can't even remember that far away, but like, I remember so many specific things. And like, do you think it's because people go, like some people just had like really hard times during that years, and going back to that is just really difficult for some people?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And what's interesting is people think that like reflecting back on your teenagers is going back.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest that you're reliving it.
Yeah.
Like every single day you are reliving the past you've already survived once. Why wasn't once enough?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so like I'll have clients when they're first starting to work with me, they'll be like, well, you know, my parents were like this. And it's like, your parents didn't do enough. I'm so sorry. Like their best wasn't enough for you. Mm-hmm. How long are you going to punish yourself for your parents' lack?
Yeah.
Because what happens is like, once you get very neutral about the what so of what happened, no matter how painful it was, because you can't change it, you start to see that reliving it, the only person it's hurting is you.
Mm-hmm.
But the reliving it is almost unconscious because you're just so skilled at navigating the shit. You're not skilled at navigating the good.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I ask people like, well, what was money like in your teenage years? You can tell there's a lot of avoidance, because it also has to acknowledge that they're reliving it now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what makes it hard.
Yeah.
Because then you have to sit with like the pain of reliving something that should not have been relived today, and simultaneously seeing where you chose to participate in it.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, when I finally got to this place of acknowledging like desperation for money, Like I just really wanted to put myself in a different financial position. Desperation is what led to abuse in a workplace.
Yeah.
I wasn't willing to leave. I wasn't willing to quit. I needed the money.
Yeah.
And so when I really looked at how my adolescent wounds of like, I need to work really hard for a mediocre life were leading, I also had to look at the impact of the choices and then feel the gravity of like, wow, the things I was willing to do for money.
Yeah.
The things I was, the level of self-disrespect I was willing to tolerate for money.
Yeah.
It hurt because the moment that I saw it, I could see how I was still doing it. But the beauty that people miss out on and why they won't do that work is because like, once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
So naturally things shift immediately.
Yeah.
Like there's no way anyone could get me to like work 80 hours a week ever again. It'll never happen.
Yeah.
You know, I had enrolled in like this copywriting program because I was like super insecure about my copy. And I realized that my teenager is the one who invested in the program because she was super insecure about communicating. But anyways,
I love that. I'm the same way with my copy. So
just like super insecure. But in the one of the calls, he goes, I'm going to help you guys work only a couple hours a day. And it was like this adult self just like took over my body again. And I was like, a day? Because up until that point, I only ever worked a couple hours a month.
Yeah.
And here was this person telling me I could work more. Like that was the opportunity. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, my teenage self was willing to like work harder, work more again for something very mediocre over like my adult self that is about self-respect, honoring and service was like, we don't hustle. We don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Like this whole program's a little off for us. Yeah. And so it was almost immediate. And then, you know, the guilt of, oh shit, I invested $5,000 on this thing. And then it's also like, it is what it is. I can't change it.
Yeah.
No loss of energy, no loss of power, no anxiety, no stress, no pressure, no force. I'm in a position now through the work that I teach my clients. I don't get scared of losing money because I'm also know that I'm always going to have my power. There's nothing outside of me that has control over my resources.
Yeah. Can you speak on... Yeah. And like, I'm the same way with my copy. I've definitely looked into investing in copy stuff. And I was like, no, like, you know, I'm good at this. I know this. There's other ways to be resourceful. I love how it kind of, you talked about being insecure in your communication. I love how everything interconnects at the end of the day.
Really?
It's funny how like this relates to this, but can you speak on money and power? Like, has like kind of taking your power back with money and kind of what you see. You know, I feel like I went through this like entire stage of my business. And I feel like so many people listening can relate where I almost like over invested in a way. And I always say like, everything to me is a learning lesson. Like I'm all willing to invest in anything and anything to help me move forward. But I did have a time where I just overly invested, how it was like, you know, I'm making more from investing. I'm going to do more. I'm going to keep doing this. And it felt like I lost my power with money. It felt like I lost like control a little bit. Can you kind of speak on, you probably hear that a lot, but can you kind of speak on that a little bit?
Oh yeah. I not only hear that a lot, I've experienced that.
Yeah.
Particularly those of us who are already in like the growth world, there is this like, you need to be growing, you need to be investing. But the truth is you need to be able to stabilize.
Yeah.
And particularly even like the money coaching space, no one wants to talk about stabilization. They want to talk about abundance.
Yeah.
Oh, but if you invest now, you're just going to grow more. It's like, well, yes, because you'll have to hustle yourself to ensure that your bills are paid. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting is like people will kind of like take a little sidestep here to give your audience this, but like people will blame hustle mentality on scarcity mindset. And that's not true. And it's a distortion because people who are scarce are scared to spend their time and energy as much as their money. They're not going to hustle anything. They're going to be very rigid. They're going to be very controlled and very tight. Someone who's abundance mindset focused, they're happy to spend the money, time, or energy because they always know there's going to be more. And so you'll find hustlers are very focused on like, there's another dollar to make. There's more energy to be had. There's more time for me to have. And it's always focused on the more in almost a very extractive way. So when we get into a position where our businesses are growing and we are earning more money, because those are the common mindsets that people focus on, we do what I call spending by proxy. You see other people investing in these bigger tier programs or spending more money, then you're like, well, that must be what I should be doing.
Yeah.
I make more money, therefore I see Joe Blow spend more money, therefore I should be spending more money too.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately you get into these like cycles of feast and famine because you don't know how to stabilize at these new up levels and you just kind of teeter back and forth rather than saying, hold on, let me stabilize at this level and really feel into what is the truest investment of time, money, or energy for me, because who I am is unique, who I am here to serve is unique, what I'm here to do is unique, and everything about the life that I'm here to do is not the life that Joe Blow has lived and experienced or will continue to have.
Mm-hmm.
Who I am is like a variable in the equation.
Love that.
And a lot of it is like having to own the variability that you are as a person.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I committed that I was no longer going to pay somebody else before myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because for years, it was always like, what's the next growth edge? Invest in this thing, do that thing. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. I'm actually pretty stellar as it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm growing by default of human evolution. I don't actually have to do anything to evolve as a person.
Yeah.
Why don't I stabilize here for a minute?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't I streamline? Why don't I simplify and allow that to carry me into the next stage of evolution rather than like pumping it by dumping tens of thousands of dollars in something that my nervous system's not ready to do yet.
Yeah.
You know, like I'll see people, they'll drop, you know, 10 grand. And then after they spend it, they spend a week in anxiety.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
You know?
I think exactly you. Like I've spent 2 years not like investing big per se, like little things here and there as needed, but I was investing. It was like high ticket only, mid ticket only. And it was effing with my nervous system a lot. I was doing it for external reasons, not like what worked for me. And I feel like not investing big and like taking control back with my money, I've learned so much more about myself. Like it's been just like a completely different experience. And mm-hmm. I think it's so important like to talk about this because I feel like a lot of people are in that situation, you know, of like, I've done it all. I've done it big, right? But, you know, and then you go off and you focus on yourself and you kind of go off on your own. And I feel like that's when I started learning much more about like my relationship with money is when I didn't have, when I wasn't investing big, when I was like owning my shit and healing my relationship with money, like going deep and going in my head, like what is happening to me type deal. And that's was like what catapulted me to, okay, I actually can do this myself and I don't need to invest big to feel this way or for external validation or for any of that.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people are in that circumstance.
Totally. And then there's also like the flip side of the coin where there's people who will spend unknowingly how much they spend on these little courses that they never implement.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like the last couple of years I've done high ticket. Yeah. Prior to that, it was like every little course I could get my hand on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ask me one thing I've learned from any of them.
Yeah.
Like I got nothing. It never got integrated. It never got implemented. And I spent so much money just trying to like find the next edge because I thought that I had to always be growing or I failed.
Yeah.
But like, yeah. I think people like you and I, you would correct me where I'm wrong, but like we want stability and longevity.
Oh,
in
yeah.
Our
definitely.
We're constantly looking for the next edge. That means we're also looking for the next opportunity to fall.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I love it. That's like exactly what I went through. But like, I know we're like, I know so many people going through that now. I just feel like there was like that time period. It was like the 2018, 2019, 2020, kind of 2021 time period where everyone was just investing in everything and anything. And I felt culprit to that. I mean, I did, that's what I did. And it was just like push, push, push till I couldn't push anymore.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, I need help with my money. That's when I was started like working on my relationship with money. Cause I saw myself make a lot. I saw myself lose a lot. And I feel like that's when it kind of, you're like, oh yeah, I need to work on that too. But what would you say, you know, cause I feel like you have such a unique perspective when it comes to money. Like I love the whole, you know, not inner child, but teenage years. I love all of your programs that you do, all the different types of clients that you work with. I feel like you have a unique take on money. It's just, it's a breath of fresh air because whenever I, you know, see content around money, you know, it's all about the, you know, just manifest it, or like, this is exactly what you need to budget when it comes to money, or, you know, this is why you're not good with money. It's always like, you know, cookie cutter shit. It's not like deep shit. What would you say is like your overall mission, like your mission when it comes to your brand and your business, that your mission and vision for like where you're going?
I love this question because I've been sitting with it for the last couple of weeks, actually, I don't know how like into human design you are, but I have an open heart.
Me too. Yeah.
And so it means that like, I'm basically, people can project on me all day long.
Yeah.
And because I also have an open ego center, I've historically just been like this chameleon, being like, okay, if that's who you need me to be, that's who I'll be. And so coming back to myself, like not investing heavily in other programs or teachings or whatever the case might be, I've really felt this thread, and this thread has been with me for years. I've just never really given enough space to breathe. Mm-hmm. And what's so distinct about my brand is I'm here to serve humans.
Yeah, love that.
Like, mm-hmm. not the spiritual woo-woo up in the ethers people who don't want to be human. Because you'll see that. The people who are trying to transcend their humanness.
Yeah.
But also not the people who forget that they're divine. Mm-hmm. That they're powerful creators and they can totally transform their lives. Like, I don't work with people who don't think that they can change anything.
Yeah.
But what I love about my brand and the vision is like, you get to be as imperfect as a person, mm-hmm. and be growing and evolving and still not be healed. And that never has to impact your money.
Yeah. Love that.
And I think that's one of the things that is so different, because in like the spiritual spaces, when they're talking about money, it's like, you got to heal that wound. I actually don't think you need to heal anything. That's why I don't tell people that their inner teen needs to grow up.
Yeah.
Like, let your inner teen be like the fucked up adrenaline junkie. Yeah. Like, they're going to be that way. Just give them an appropriate hobby. Get into BMXing. Like, you know, maybe don't get into gambling, you know? I don't firmly believe that we need to be healed to have what we want or the things that we want in our life.
Yeah.
I think we have to be a participant. Mm-hmm. In it. And so a lot of my work is like, I talk really gritty. I don't do the fluff.
Yeah.
This is how you manifest.
Yeah. No.
Don't do it. I also like to talk about like the grittier taboos of human existence.
Yeah.
You know, like my membership's called the money laundry because money is dirty. It activates the shame, the guilt, the embarrassment, the humiliation. That's what gets in the way of our money. Not that we have an unhealing about it. It's that we're attached to the shame, or we're attached to the dirtiness that we think is important. We're attached to the morality policing. We're attached to the being seen as good people, instead of like, well, what if you could just be who you are today, as imperfect as you are, and still have the time, money, and energy to require to live your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The vision of that is that when we stop wasting our power in shaming ourselves for being human, that power gets to go towards service.
Yeah.
Like, I think about all the years I wasted trying to be perfect, trying to get it right, trying to get more money, and like all of that trying zapped my power. It took my sovereignty away from me. When I stopped trying to be a good person or stopped trying to be good, ethical, moral, whatever, and just allowed myself to be imperfect and not get it right all the time,
mm-hmm.
my business uptook like crazy.
Yeah.
And the clients that I was working with were getting radical evolutions in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wasn't so busy and consumed with like who I needed to be. I could just be who I am.
Yeah.
And what's beautiful about that is like my clients love it. I think we're all very tired mm-hmm. of the brand mm-hmm. persona that people are holding on to.
Yeah.
Because it's like we're evolving all the time.
Yeah.
I'm not the sorority girl that I was in college.
No. Yeah.
Like at all anymore. But imagine if that was my persona that I had to uphold for the rest of my life.
No, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think it's just like you evolve as a human, everything's going to evolve at the end of the day. And it's like owning that.
Yeah.
You know, like you evolve and then your business is going to evolve and your brand's going to evolve. But so many people are stuck in like a specific year and then they're not happy. And that's just, and then it's inauthentic and it's sucks.
Yep.
So we got to be in that place.
Yeah. And like reliving the life that they've already lived. Like I've yeah. already done that. Been there, done yeah. that.
Been there, done that. It's time to kind of move on to the next phase. And I like how you talked about like attachment and attaching and like, you know, I've done lots of money work and I feel like I've done a good job. Like I kind of separate as much as money is such a part of me, like it doesn't define me. And it's so separated now. Like, it's almost like, you know, I've done so much money work to where I'm not going to say I don't like worry about it. Like I never want to get in that mindset, but I don't let it define, you know, my decisions and who I am. Like I used to be so attached with money. Like I think my worth was tied to money so much. What do you think about that? Like, do you feel like people that you work with or that you see, like they define so much of themselves with money? And I guess it kind of goes back to their adolescent years and kind of growing up and reliving all of that. But do you find that people put so much of their worth and attach so much in their decisions to money?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why the whole curriculum that I teach is called financial intimacy.
Love that.
I've redefined the terminology. Typically,
yeah.
like historically, financial intimacy is the conversation that takes place between a couple about finances.
Yeah.
Me, I think that's pretty useless because most people aren't intimate enough with their finances all alone.
Mm-hmm.
So what conversation are you going to have with your partner about your money if you're already too scared to look at your own debt?
Yeah.
Right. And so if you really like just zoom out, people attach their worth to any relationship in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Money is a relationship. In fact, it's your longest lasting partner.
Yeah.
Like it's not going anywhere.
No.
And it will either be rejected by your behavior mm-hmm. or brought closer.
Love that.
And, you know, I've said this like I don't even know, like 1,000 different ways, but money doesn't want you to be obsessed with it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't want you to avoid it either. So when you actually get into relationship with money, when you can be honest
mm-hmm.
and responsible with how you're showing up in that relationship, the relationship will evolve.
Yep.
I've been in debt, out of debt 3 or 4 times. When I get out of debt, it's because I'm in relationship to my money.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean I don't use debt and I don't make crazy choices. It just means that I feel totally connected to what's happening in and out of my money. And I'm not cock-blocking my cash. I'm totally involved with receiving money. I'm not avoiding my expenses, but I'm checking in if they're the most respectful ways that I could be spending my money. I'm not scared of saving, but I'm saving within a way that my nervous system can hold. And I'm not trying to like pay off my debt rapidly. I'm doing it in a way that is honest. And again, honoring my nervous system. Like not giving myself too much too soon, but not running away from it either. And so when we talk about attachment and like worth, people do that with their partners. They do that with their jobs. They do that with literally everything in life. Anyways, money is not excluded from that.
Yep.
At all.
Exactly. I love that. I'm all for that. And Yeah. I think back to, you know, my relationship with money and the good, the bad, the coming. It was just like, I think a huge monumental moment for me was just coming face to face with my money decisions and like acknowledging everything and being open and honest and checking in and kind of doing that. And because I made some like really bad money decisions. I wouldn't say bad, but you know, they weren't the best. And when I stopped avoiding them and just like came face to face with what I've done and like figure out how I'm going to make that relationship better. That's just, it was like a breath of fresh air. But for someone who's listening, who, you know, really wants to work on their money relationship, their intimacy with money, what would you say is like one thing that someone can kind of start working on this week or this month to kind of work on, you know, that relationship with money, that intimacy with money, if they feel like their money situation is just kind of all over the place?
So I'll just give you this. This is like the first lesson inside the piggy bank, which is Intro to Financial Intimacy. And the way that the program's structured is that there's a philosophy and then there's an assignment and then there's like an inner team teaching. The philosophy that is essential if you're dealing with your money is objective neutrality. And this is why I don't agree with a lot of money coaches, because the way that they shift your behavior is through shame, blame, pride, or credit. Mm-hmm. And I want you to be neutral when you make a financial decision. Yep. And the only way for you to really practice that is to see all the ways that you're not. Open up your bank account. Take a look at your balance. Do you feel neutral about it, or do you feel withdrawn or hyper volatile? Right? This is like basic polyvagal theory. Like you're either totally involved, hyper involved, or withdrawn. Mm-hmm. And that's going to tell you a lot about where your nervous system is at in relationship to your money. And then you just work on bringing neutrality to it. You sit, you look at your bank account. If it's $100, if it's in negatives, if it's $5,000, it doesn't matter what the number is, because the number does not matter to who you are as a person. It's just a number. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean anything significant. It doesn't mean anything about you. It is just a snapshot in time, because money doesn't have a permanent state. It's constantly evolving, just like you are. And so if you want to start becoming intimate with your money, you have to bring the neutrality into it, because if you don't, your distrust of money, your anger about money, whatever emotion you're bringing to the money is going to taint it. That's what's going to color the way of all your decisions. So every day for a straight week, open up your bank account, look at all of your accounts. I would take one account at a time. What's the balance of this account? How do I feel? Can I bring a little bit more neutrality to this? There's nothing wrong here. This is just fact. Fact doesn't mean anything. I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I have always been okay. I know how to survive shit things. I can survive it again. And I know I'm not going to have to.
Yeah.
As you do that, you can do it with credit card balances as well. Like if you're almost maxing out a credit card, be like, okay, I see this. I don't feel neutral about my credit card balance. What do you feel? And just keep checking in with that until you start to find the baseline of, oh, I feel neutral here.
Yeah.
Once you have a baseline within your system that you're like, okay, this number doesn't scare me. This number feels fine. That's going to be your benchmark for everything. Okay. But you need to find where it is first. And so that's one practice. And I want to give you another practice too, because it can be a little bit more instant in terms of finding neutrality. And do you want to do it with me so we could kind of show your listeners
sure.
how to? Cool.
Sure.
So do you drink coffee?
Yes.
Yeah. What's your favorite coffee?
I like 2 shots of espresso over ice with creamer.
Okay. There's no, nothing else. No sweets, no pumps, no.
It's like vanilla creamer.
Vanilla creamer. Okay, great. Do you make it at home, or do you like have a particular coffee shop that you really love?
I make it at home.
Make it at home. Okay. So what I would love for you to do is I want you just to take a moment and imagine that you're going to a grocery store.
Okay.
You know that you need vanilla creamer.
Mm-hmm.
You're walking in and you can smell the fruits and vegetables inside. You can feel the cool breeze of the little misters on the peppers and eggplants. And you're walking past because you're like, dairy and dairy substances or anything alternative is the back of the grocery store. You're committed. It's the only thing you've come for. It's the only thing you want. You got to replace this vanilla creamer. You walk all the way to the back and you notice that there are like 8 different vanilla creamers. Mm-hmm. All of them are the same brand, but they all have different price tags. Rather than looking at the price tags, you're going to take a beat and you're going to find the lowest amount of money you'd be willing to pay without questioning the quality. What number is that? See if you can
find it. Like $8?
Okay, so if it was priced at $5, you'd be like, oh, this has got to be awful.
Probably. Yeah.
Okay. First thing I want to say, listeners, if your number is different, don't worry about it. It's intentional. In your system, you have a low number where once it hits that, a dollar less, you start questioning things.
Yeah.
And you're like, that doesn't feel like a safe decision. That feels like there's probably some risks associated. It's probably going sour, probably has a lot of chemicals. Like you start questioning it to a level where your nervous system is saying, this is not a choice for us. Okay. Now you're going to take a big deep breath in. We've acknowledged that that's your lower range. Again, we're not going to look at the prices, but we know that there's so many different options. I want you to feel into what is the highest amount you could pay without being like, that better be made of gold.
Like $12.
$12. Okay. So at $13, you're like, I'm not buying this. I'm going to go to a different store.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at $11.50.
Yeah.
You'll buy it. You might not feel super comfortable about it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't send you into reactivity.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Okay. So between $8 and $12, would it be safe to assume that that's somewhat neutral?
Yeah.
So that's called your expenditure range, and that exists for literally everything in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is that literally no two people are going to have the exact same expenditure range.
Yeah.
And so what ends up happening is once people start to get into relationship with their expenditure range, there is this default orientation where it says, I must be bad or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
If my range is higher than someone else's, I must be bad or unintelligent or whatever. Or I must be cheap. I must be like self-disrespecting if it's lower. Like we create all of these stories.
Yeah.
That is where you physically feel neutral. That's all we care about. The stories are useless. And in fact, they're a way of draining your power.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Instead of you just acknowledging, that's where I feel neutral.
Yeah.
And so take that practice into like when you're going to Starbucks.
Yeah.
That will tell you what choices you can make and be responsible for.
Yeah.
Most people are very good at like cheapening what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just feel super resentful, which is a misallocation of your energy.
Mm-hmm.
Or they kind of push beyond what they're capable of. And that's when these other teachers will say, oh, you're living beyond your means.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, you pushed your nervous system because if it was within your range, you would have the ability to respond to that.
Yeah.
Your nervous system is not going to be cool with spending $1,000 if you're in, well, that's not even necessarily true, but like your nervous system isn't going to be okay with spending more than you can actually hold.
Yeah. Agreed.
Right. That doesn't mean it's an objective truth. It doesn't mean that you should spend $11.99 on creamer.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a diagnostic of like, that's where your nervous system feels safe.
Yeah.
You now know what neutral feels like.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
So those are two articles.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think creamer is that much. I was just thinking about it. I was like, I feel like maybe from like Whole Foods, but I love that. I feel like that's such a good exercise with anything, like kind of going into whenever you're getting groceries or, you know, definitely Trader Joe's, like wanting to buy everything in the store or a Target or something like that. I feel like That's so important. I love that exercise. I feel like that's going to be really helpful. And yeah, I'm going to be spending money on $13 creamer.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because like I've used this practice literally daily.
Yeah.
And so if I'm going out grocery shopping, I'm like, oh, I need eggs, let's say. I go to this one store and it's like the eggs are like $7. I was like, I don't need eggs this week.
Yeah.
I'll opt for something that my nervous system isn't inflamed by.
Yeah. Love. Yeah.
Right. And there's people that, especially, you know, I don't know how much you've seen it, but there's people who will spend crazy amounts of money on like quote unquote nervous system regulating groceries.
Yeah.
And it's like the very act of buying those groceries right now is dysregulating.
Yeah.
Like you're putting yourself into financial compression and physical compression to meet the shoulds that you think you need to meet instead of saying, well, okay, well, what's within my range to take care of myself? Yeah. Which is how I defined responsibility. It's your ability to respond to the reality at hand.
Yeah.
If you can't make a financial choice from regulated, your responsibility is to go find where are you regulated.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that might mean like, I actually feel safer to eat soup for the next week.
Yeah.
I would never recommend that. But like, I want to give permission to the people who might be in a position of like, oh, wow, I'm severely dysregulated. Okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
You don't force yourself to be more dysregulated under the hope that you might regulate.
Yeah. Love that. Definitely. I'm definitely for that. I feel like, you know, understanding, you know, as you said, being neutral in that range, but understanding like where your nervous system flares up, I think is so important. I feel like this is just going to make people more aware, you know, because like, you know, the overconsumption of social media and TikToks and everyone like overspending and stuff. Like, I know when I watch that stuff, my nervous system flares up. So I'm like, block, delete. Like, you know, I want to feel that neutral and not being pressured to go overconsume and spend money. So I love
that. I think it's interesting too, because, you know, like with the price of groceries going up, people are very aware at how dysregulated they already are.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Right?
Definitely. Yeah.
But it becomes this place where people go, well, now I just have to operate in a place of dysregulation. And my suggestion is that you don't have to.
Right. No, you don't.
Right. Like my TCM, my Chinese medicine doctor, I guess is what they're called. Mm-hmm. She wants me to eat red meat. And I'm like, I go to the grocery store and my nervous system fires up and like, I make good money.
Yeah.
This is also totally separate from how much money you make.
Right. Agreed. Yes.
Right. And so I go to the grocery store, I see the price of a steak and I'm like, nope, can't do it. I just can't. So typically if I'm going to eat red meat, I end up buying like the strips that you're supposed to use for like teriyaki, because they're just cheaper.
Yeah, no, I feel that. Yeah.
You know, so it's like, okay, I can't eat what my TCM wants from me, but I'm not going to put myself into a financial compression to meet that external requirement.
Yeah.
By abusing myself. And I would suggest that like inflaming your nervous system to appease an external standard is a self-harm.
Yeah.
Like of the most basic kind.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Steak's expensive. I just bought the little steak strips because I was like, I'm not buying like just to eat. I'd rather, you know, if I'm going to spend that money, I'm going to like, you know, one, I'm bad at making steak. Two, I'll just make something a little bit more simple. But yeah, no, I feel like, you know, people are now noticing how kind of dysregulated they are. Like even just everyone talking like how expensive groceries are or inflation and all of that. Like, you know, now people are like aware of kind of the things that they need to work on and the range they want to kind of stay in. And I understand that, you know, people with like lots of kids or a big family, like, you know, kind of like that feeling, like even when I see like someone in a grocery haul with for a family of seven, my heart like starts to populate because I'm like, oh my God, that is a lot. But, you know, it's sometimes like it's necessary, or you have to cut back or kind of do what you need to do. So,
well, and this is what's really interesting, right? Like a family of four, let's say, your nervous systems are already acclimated to spend more than you or I.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. And so there is this place where like nervous system regulation when it comes to money isn't about controlling external circumstances. It's I'm inviting people, where are you right now? Where is your level of regulation or dysregulation? Because that's not static.
Mm-hmm.
Our intention is to make sure that you are in a position where you are unfazed, unbothered, and unhindered by what happens outside.
Yep.
I've had people ask me, they're like, Steph, why don't you teach about the recession? I'm like, because it happens every 4 years.
Yeah, happens a lot.
Like every 6 years we go in through some sort of cycle.
Yeah.
And for me to waste and abuse my energy and harm my nervous system going down the rabbit hole for something that I could just get good at navigating.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, the latter feels like a more appropriate thing. And so even when clients come to me and they're like, oh my God, this thing's happening. I was like, I'd much rather have you be resilient for anything that could happen, that mm-hmm. your nervous system's regulated. If you were to lose $10,000, if you were to gain $10,000, if you were to lose your job yeah. tomorrow, if you lost a client, like, is your nervous system able to handle the impact of what you can't control? Or yeah. is your nervous system so, so dysregulated that you're basically in a state of fear and panic at all times and therefore can't make financial decisions
yeah.
from a sound, grounded place?
Yeah, definitely.
I would just much rather people to be chill in all circumstances.
Agreed. Chill in all circumstances. Chill. Chill money.
Chill money. Well, chill and it's money. Like, I have like a free masterclass that I give out, and I was listening to it this morning because I was like, oh, I just every time, you know, you like you listen to your own content and then it sounds yeah. brand new after a while. And that was one of the things that I was really pointing to. I was like, I don't want you to feel like you need to control the external world when mm-hmm. you've just got it. You've got your back and your bag, yeah. regardless of what happens.
Yep. Yep. Just focus on you. At the end of the day, I feel like we like are trying to control everything, and which can, you know, shows up everywhere, but definitely just around, we try to control everything and money and all of that. And my husband always says, control what you can control, which, you know, there's not a lot we can control. There's a lot that's out of our control, and we just have to own it and move forward kind of with that yeah. mentality around it. But I love this. This was awesome. I can't wait for everyone to listen to this. Or if you are listening, thank you so much. I would love to know where the audience, one, can find you. Where do you hang out most? And two, how can the audience work with you?
Yeah. Lately, loving Threads.
It's fun.
That's how we met.
Yeah.
I have been spending a lot of time on there. I spend a lot of time on Instagram as well. I've been trying to get on the TikTok thing. I mean, I have TikTok yeah. accounts as well. I just have a tendency of going viral for things that are totally unrelated to my business, and I haven't figured out how to correct that. But you can find me at financiallyintimate.com if you're looking at money programs, or if you want to look more power focused, like interpersonal relationships, not just money, you can just find me at Instagram at Stefania Maria with two A's at the end, and okay. just slide into my DMs. I wish more people slid into my DMs with questions.
Yeah.
That would just be more women fun.
I like to answer questions. Like, I don't really, I love it. My yeah. boundaries are like zero there, and I don't care. So I like to answer questions. It's fun. But all of those links are linked in the show notes. Thank you so much. I feel like we could have talked about so many other things, but we just stuck with money. I love it.
Hey, that just more opportunities for
yeah. me. I love it. Thank you so much again. If you're listening, please share and tag us on Instagram. Our links will be below. And thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.